कार्यक्रम को ऑनलाइन भी सुन सकते हैं planetaudio.org.nz/saivachanamrit। ये कार्यक्रम एक सप्ताह तक ऑनलाइन अवेलेबल है।
Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today is 24th of September. We will continue listen to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once again to Dharma Radio. Today I'm going to wander into the realm of Christianity to get the program going. I found a rather wonderful quote, almost Buddhist in its philosophy, by a Presbyterian minister and author by the name of Frederick Buechner. It goes like this. Of the seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. To lick your wounds, to smack your lips over grievances long past, to roll over your tongue the prospect of bitter confrontation still to come, to savor to the last toothsome morsel both the pain you were given and the pain you were giving back. In many ways, it is a feast fit for a king. The chief drawback is that what you're wolfing down is yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you. And don't you think that's an extraordinarily graphic description of how anger is the monster that consumes the person it has taken over? All the programs in this series so far have stressed that the person most harmed by our anger is ourselves. Of course, the Christian creed doesn't have the explicit explanation of karma that Buddhists have, but still I think that quote from Buechner suggests the immense future suffering that we will endure if we give in to anger. His Holiness the Dalai Lama stresses again and again that nothing is as destructive as anger fueled by hatred. If you remember, I used a quote from him in the last program that said, "The difference between hatred and attachment is that hatred, when it arises, is very destructive, very rough. It immediately has a very disturbing quality. This is not so much the case with attachment, which has more gentleness." Attachment is only on a par with anger because it is the basis for our anger. We wouldn't get angry if we had no attachment. But in terms of destructiveness, anger is the worst. I guess you could say attachment is like the king who sends the troops out to do battle, whereas anger is the head of the army. Those of you who have just tuned into the program today may by now have realized that over the last few weeks, we've been talking about how to counter anger with its antidote, patience. I've been following a Buddhist text by the very great Buddhist master called Shantideva, and using the teachings I've had on this text, some of His Holiness's commentaries, and the explanation by the great Buddhist nun Pema Chodron in her book No Time to Lose. Shantideva's text is the guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life, and we are going through the sixth chapter, which is on patience. But before we go any further, let's set our motivation as we usually do. As I've said before, the most important part of any action is the motivation. That is what determines whether an action will have a positive result in the future or not. Even though in the short term it may not turn out well, if the motivation was right, the long-term effect will be positive. So let us look at our motivation for taking part in this program. And if it's for some temporary benefit, let's change it for something more meaningful. The greatest motivation is to realize our highest potential so that we can be of greatest benefit in helping all others. Of course, from a Buddhist point of view, realizing our highest potential, or if you like, becoming fully evolved, means we free ourselves from all suffering and attain the state of unending bliss. It also means becoming fully omniscient, fully knowledgeable about all that can be known. In that state, we can see exactly what will best benefit others, so we will know exactly what to advise or prescribe to help them. While we are still ordinary beings, we can really only work on guesswork from what is presented to our senses, and as we all know, that's not very reliable. How often have you tried to help someone and only made them unhappy? I have many times. But a Buddha doesn't do that unless realizing that a short-term unhappiness will bring great long-term benefits. If we really want to be of the greatest benefit we can, we have to become Buddhas. So let's make this program part of the process to become enlightened by setting the motivation to attain that state to be of greatest benefit to others. Thank you. Now back to anger and its Lord attachment. In the last program, I quoted a beautiful verse from a teaching called The Four Mindfulnesses by the Seventh Dalai Lama. Do you remember it? In the prison of the suffering of limitless cyclic existence, wander the six types of sentient beings bereft of happiness. Fathers and mothers who protected you with kindness are there. Forsaking desire and hatred, cultivate endearment and compassion. Not letting your mind stray, place it within compassion. Making your attention unforgetful, maintain it within compassion. It's a verse that teaches us how to look at other beings we come across with genuine love and compassion, not tainted by attachment or hatred. Normally, we divide people we meet into friend, enemy, and stranger. Friends we cling to and often protect, even at great cost to ourselves. Enemies we harm as much as we can, and strangers we basically ignore. Behind all these attitudes is attachment, attachment to me and mine. Whatever I see as helpful or agreeable to me, I take on as a friend. Whatever threatens me or mine, I develop a mind of harm towards and call my enemy. And what neither helps nor harms me or mine, I take very little notice of. Actually, this is an unprofitable way of viewing others. Through clinging to our friends, we create many negative actions, as we also do by harming our enemies. And all those negative actions will definitely ripen into a lot of suffering for us in the future. Wouldn't it be better to see all beings equally warmly and develop compassion for them all? That verse from the Seventh Dalai Lama reminds us that every single being has been a parent to us in the past. The only difference between our hugely kind parents of the present and those of our past lives is time. So why should we feel more warmly towards this life's parents than those of other lives? If we can keep our minds on the fact that every being we come across has been our mother or father in a previous life and looked after us with unstinting kindness, how can we develop hatred towards them? Even a lethal snake becomes an object of compassion if we can really see it in this way. This verse suggests, as the Buddhist teachings tell us, that the cause of all our problems is afflictive emotions, like anger and attachment, particularly attachment, which is at the root of all other afflictive emotions. So if we can free ourselves from attachment and develop real love and compassion for others, not only will we be freed from all the difficulties brought on by attachment, anger, and so on, but we will be able to help others be free of them as well. And that is why Shantideva says we should discard our attachments like we would discard from a house on fire anything that would spread the flames to other houses in the vicinity, even if it means we suffer some discomfort in the process. Anger fueled by attachment only leads us to one destination, self-destruction. As Friedrich Buechner said, the chief drawback at the feast of anger is that what you are wolfing down is yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you. So to avoid destruction, it would be much better to take on some present, much smaller suffering in training our minds to be patient, in the same way Shantideva says, as a man would be very happy if his death sentence was commuted to only having his hand chopped off. Why is a man condemned to death not fortunate if he's released after having his hand cut off? Why am I, who is experiencing human misery, not fortunate if by that I'm spared from the agonies of hell, if I'm unable to endure even the mere sufferings of the present, then why do I not restrain myself from being angry, which will be the source of hellish misery? Here the author points out that one of the main causes of landing up in a hellish existence is anger and hatred. He says that if the miseries and difficulties we have to go through in this life are hard to bear, how will we be able to cope when we have to experience the results of karma in a hell realm? In his commentary on these verses, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that in addition to the future suffering we create for ourselves, we can also remember that getting angry with someone who has harmed us doesn't actually protect us from that harm. But if we generate patience and react calmly and with some compassion towards our tormentor, not only do we prevent the causes for suffering in the future, but by accepting the discomfort of the harm, we exhaust the results of the negative karma that produced the situation in the first place. We can reconsider the example I used in the last program when two motorists got into a road rage situation and bashed each other over the heads with wheel braces. The two drivers landed up at the hospital with bleeding heads, and the police charged both as well. If only one had reacted in this with patience and calm, it is possible nobody would have been hurt and the situation could have been resolved much more sanely. But even now, if just one of those two people nurses his rage and decides to find where the other lives to do further damage to him, it could lead to an ongoing escalation of the problem, perhaps until someone is murdered. And this is only in this life. Never mind what will the result be in coming lives. And then getting back to the Bodhisattva's way of life, Shantideva continues in the same thread as in the previous verses. For the sake of satisfying my desires, I have suffered numerous burnings in hell. But by those actions, I fulfilled the purpose of neither myself nor others. But now, since great meaning will accrue from harm, which is not even a fraction of that, I should indeed be solely joyful towards such suffering that dispels the harms of all. He says that when we are only trying to fulfill our own desires, we create many causes for the hell realm experiences. For instance, we might develop a liking for fishing and so spend a lot of money buying a boat and fishing gear so we can go and catch fish every weekend. We may not feel angry towards the fish, but through our attachment to fishing and the flesh of the fish, we certainly commit great aggression towards them. We kill many of the sea's creatures to satisfy our own selfish desires. And we may even get very angry if we have to work one weekend and can't go fishing. So, under the self-centered desire, we create so many causes to go to the lower realms. However, if we gave up catching the fish and instead learned how to be an underwater photographer, we could use stunning photographs to persuade others to preserve rather than destroy sea life. Thus practicing compassion and patience and giving up harming other creatures, even though it may derive us of fish dinners, we will create much positive potential. And that will help us in future lives as well as in this one. Again, Shantideva says that the difficulties we experience in this life gathering positive potential are slight compared to the sufferings we will have to go through in the lower realms if we create harm. When we practice patience and tolerance in difficult situations, not only will it benefit us, it will also help others. Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book Peace is Every Step, writes, "Anger is rooted in our lack of understanding of ourselves and of the causes, deep-seated as well as immediate, that brought about this unpleasant state of affairs. Anger is also rooted in desire, pride, agitation, and suspicion. The primary roots of our anger are in ourselves. Our environment and other people are only secondary. It's not difficult for us to accept the enormous damage brought about by a natural disaster, such as an earthquake or a flood. But when damage is caused by another person, we don't have much patience. We know that earthquakes and floods have causes, and we should see that the person who has precipitated our anger also has reasons, deep-seated and immediate, for what he has done. For instance, someone who speaks badly to us may have been spoken to in exactly the same way just the day before, or by his alcoholic father when he was a child. When we see and understand these kinds of causes, we can begin to be free from our anger. I'm not saying that someone who viciously attacks us should not be disciplined. But what is most important is that we first take care of the seeds of negativity in ourselves. Then, if someone needs to be helped or disciplined, we will do so out of compassion, not anger and retribution. If we genuinely try to understand the suffering of another person, we're more likely to act in a way that will help him overcome his suffering and confusion, and that will help all of us. Now, normally when we get into a situation of conflict, we react only to what is in front of our face. We don't take the time to consider the many causes that led to the situation. Those causes include the conditioning and habitual responses of the person we are having trouble with. Of course, often situations flare up quickly, and there will probably be not time to consider everything that went into making up a conflict. However, if we train ourselves in mindfulness, patience, and compassion, over time in small conflicts, we will eventually be able to use what we've learned in much more serious situations. That training will also help to weaken the angry response, thus benefiting both ourselves and others. We really have no control over others' minds or actions. I remember going to a party when I was a much younger man, and as my friends and I were leaving, an argument broke out between two other men. Another man, who had just arrived, asked what was going on, and when we told him, he wanted to know why we were leaving just as the party was getting interesting. He said he'd come to the party hoping to get into a fight, among other things. Trying to deal with an antagonist with that kind of attitude would be difficult, I think. Unless you're very skillful, it may be hard to prevent a conflict if he picks you out of the crowd to harass. However, we can train our minds so that even if a fight does develop, we're not internally taken over by anger and aggression, even if we have to take some strong action. Pema Chodron has a personal story to tell in connection with Shantideva's last two verses. She relates the suffering he talks about to the relationship she got into in an early part of her life. She writes, "There was the pain of getting into them," those are the relationships, "even more pain getting out of them, and a tremendous amount of energy expended in between." Now, isn't there anybody that doesn't resonate with that sentiment? But she then goes on to talk about how the other so-called important things in our lives may also bring us to the point of despair. Our careers and all the other things we pursue can feel like the numerous burnings in hell, she says. And what do we have to show for it with the passage of time? We have even stronger habits of striving, craving, hatred, and revenge. If we keep strengthening these old patterns, our present aches are nothing compared to those to come. This is our chance to do something different. We've spent lifetimes trying to find happiness in ordinary samsaric ways. Now let's try working straightforwardly with the mind itself. Let's also recall that our ordinary human suffering has value. It can humble us and teach us compassion. The pain we go through while changing old habits is not only worth tolerating, it's worth celebrating. Wow, that's a different attitude. I don't know that it's so easy to celebrate in the midst of suffering, but I guess if you constantly keep in mind that the eventual result should be complete freedom from suffering, your mind will have something to be pleased about, even when the path seems exceptionally stony and difficult. Shantideva now goes on to talk about how the mind reacts when it learns about the good fortune of someone it regards with dislike. It's not usually too happy and may even become a bit envious. But this is what Shantideva says. "Should someone else find joyous happiness upon praising my enemy as an excellent person, why, mind, do you not praise him too, and likewise make yourself happy? That joyous happiness of yours would be a source of joy, not something prohibited, a precept given by the excellent ones, and a supreme means for assembling others." And here's a different attitude also. Shantideva says, why shouldn't we feel happiness when our enemies are praised? If we consider the situation more carefully than just following our jealous instincts, we easily see that the mind of the person praising our enemy is expressing a lot of its own joy. If we can fully appreciate that without envy or dislike, how much more peaceful and satisfied our minds would be. We would be even better off if we actually joined in the praise, says Shantideva. We could then experience a similar happiness to the person who's doing the praising. Whereas if we don't, if we just give in to our jealousy, will we be experiencing happiness or discomfort? I think we'll all agree jealousy and anger are definitely uncomfortable feelings. So in a way, it comes down to whether we want happiness or its opposite. Not only that, but in his commentary, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that by our joining in with a praise, we make the whole situation happy, and therefore other people will think well of us. At any rate, they will think a lot more of us than if we show that we are full of jealousy and anger. And we might even begin to turn our enemy into a friend. And Pema Chodron points out that it's not easy when someone else gets the compliments, or job, or perks, or whatever that we want. We can't pretend it doesn't get to us. But now, she writes, is not the time to go onto automatic pilot. Instead, we can do something revolutionary. We could say to ourselves, I'm glad for them, and if I were in their shoes, I would want them to be glad for me. When the undertow of anger or resentment is pulling me under, she writes, teaching myself the Dharma like this is sometimes the only thing that saves me from drowning. I know that it is in a way expected that sports people don't criticize each other, but I've been quite impressed by the respect that the two great tennis rivals, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal, have shown for each other over the years. After Federer beat Nadal for the Wimbledon title in 2007, he could have been a little bit scathing about his rival, but instead he showed respect, joking that he was happy he had won before Nadal took all the Grand Slam tennis titles. And Nadal paid Federer equal respect by saying, to compare me now with Roger is not possible, but I'm young and improving with every season. Though rivals, no matter who wins, it makes everybody feel happy when competitors are complimentary about each other and don't give in to jealousy or bitterness. And so Shantideva goes on to explain that being happy at your enemy's success is the sure way to win your own success. He says, that joyous happiness of yours would be a source of joy, not something prohibited, a precept given by the excellent ones and a supreme means for assembling others. Pema Chodron says this verse refers to what she calls the four joys of practicing patience. Those are stainlessness, happiness, praise by the holy ones, and perfection in helping others. And this is how she sees it. So often, when we achieve happiness, our gain is, intentionally or unintentionally, someone else's loss. If we get the job, some other person doesn't. If we win the Olympic gold, others are crying because they lost. It's not that we are malicious or in any way at fault. That's just the way it is. Even if we don't purposely step on someone else's toes, our happiness is subtly stained. The practice of patience, on the other hand, is stainless. In every case, no one loses and everyone gains. The practice of patience brings happiness. This is the second joy. It isn't always instant pleasure. Sometimes it's just the great relief of lessening our burden of rage. Just being able to pause and relax instead of retaliating gradually brings unshakable well-being. We find that very few people provoke us, and the world is a friendlier place. The third joy is that patience is praised by the Buddhas. In the most profound sense, this means it brings us closer to our Buddha nature, our basic goodness. The fourth joy is that patience enables us to communicate sanely. It allows us to be heard and is thus the supreme means for assembling or winning over others. In other words, we can get our message across because no one feels threatened or accused. Now, this may all be true, but I can still hear some of the more ferociously cutthroat businessmen jeering. Give your enemies happiness. Be happy when they make lots of money and their business is really successful. not a chance. But Shantideva has an answer to that as well. It is said that others are made happy through being praised in this way. But if in this way you do not want them to have this happiness, then, since it makes them happy, you should cease giving wages and the like to your servants. But you would be adversely affected both in this and in future lives. The objection here is that it's natural to feel jealousy when the enemy is successful, because that enemy is now experiencing happiness. And who wants their enemy to be happy? Shantideva replies, well, if the basis of your resentment is that you don't like someone else being happy, you might as well stop helping others or paying your servants' wages, for that makes them happy. Of course, that will soon make others lose their happiness, and maybe make you happy for a while, like Scrooge in Dickens' A Christmas Carol. But very quickly, you will find out that you're the loser both in the short and long term. Not only will you lose all your friends and servants, but you will not create positive karma, and so in future lives will land up in very difficult situations. When people describe my own good qualities, I want others to be happy too. But when they describe the good qualities of others, I do not wish to be happy myself. And now Shantideva points out the inconsistency of our behavior when we act in this jealous fashion. When we do something that others praise us for, we become overjoyed and we want everyone to hear about how good we really are. We want all our friends and relatives to cheer us on. Yet when the same thing happens to someone else, we're not at all keen to give them the happiness we crave for our good deeds. Isn't this a very contradictory way to go about things? It might be, but Pema Chodron says this is a very up-to-date verse. We could read it anywhere in the world, to any cultural, economic, or racial group, and everybody would get it, she writes. The last two lines describe a predictable human response. We resent it when others are praised instead of ourselves. Shantideva's point is that nurturing this kind of response doesn't make anybody happy. And His Highness says something similar. When people we do not like are praised, we normally become jealous. This is a mistake. When good things are said of others, we should try to join in. Then we too may get a little happiness. So why not rejoice? If we can rejoice and feel a sense of satisfaction when those we dislike are praised, the happiness we have is truly positive and approved by the Buddhas. When we practice like this, even our enemies come to appreciate us. This is one of the best ways of gaining others' respect. Shantideva then makes a very good point that if we are really serious about our Buddhist intentions, this inconsistent kind of behavior becomes even more incomprehensible. Having generated the awakening mind through wishing all beings to be happy, why should I become angry if they find some happiness themselves? For those whose sole aim is to gain enlightenment to best benefit others, being unhappy when others gain happiness is totally inappropriate. His Holiness says, with such inconsistency, we cannot expect to reach our goal, enlightenment. It's much better, he says, to feel great happiness when others, through their own efforts, get even a little praise and joy. And that's all we have time for today. Please dedicate any positive potential we've generated to gaining enlightenment for all sentient beings. Thank you. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, keep warm-hearted and live kindly. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful. Beneficial. Empowering.